Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport. It's our guy in Madrid.
Well, believe it or not, it is not going to be all white on the afternoon. And by the afternoon, I mean the afternoon of tomorrow when Real Madrid host Espanyol in La Liga at midday. Nope, not all white, but instead, it will be mint. Mint, mate. Yep, it's going to be mint, mate. Yep, a change of strip for Los Blancos. We'll see Zizou's troops clad in the first choice mint green kit this Saturday. The decision comes after the club's initiative to support the United Nations COP25 Convention on Climate Change. Good to see the powers that be making moves to raise awareness on what is a gigantic global issue, of course. And speaking of powers that be, on the line now we have Matt Wiltsey from Managing Madrid. Are you feeling mint, Matt?
You know what, I like the mint green jersey. I think it's going to be fun to see the boys out there in the third kit at the Bernabeu, which is rare. I mean, we're only used to seeing them in all white out in the Bernabeu, but yeah, it'll be interesting. And this isn't the first time they've done kind of an eco-friendly awareness campaign. They actually, in the 2016-2017 season, they wore Adidas Parley kits, which were made from plastics from the ocean. And the kit, it was a pouring down game. They actually won it against Sporting Gijon, but the kits kind of they fared all right. The font on the front, the Fly Emirates, kind of started to wear off.
I remember seeing images of that and thinking, I mean, the kit looked a bit funny. I mean, brilliant. It's a brilliant initiative. A great bit of work there from Real Madrid. Like you said, they've got history in this. But I do remember seeing the sponsor thinking, oh, they are not going to be happy with that, regardless of the climate reasons behind it. The sponsors absolutely would not have been happy about that whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it was pretty funny, but we'll see. I mean, apparently they have a banner on the side of the Bernabeu as well, kind of supporting the COP25 conference, and it will be up until, I believe, December 13th when the conference ends. So, no, it's a good initiative from the club, and obviously a big club like Real Madrid putting forth that effort, putting forth that support, that's huge.
Well, the big news, of course, Matt, that we have to talk about, and it seems like it is every week, we do have to touch on this because, hey, it is breaking news in the world of football, is that Zinedine Zidane is not going to ask Gareth Bale to stop playing golf.
No, he's not. Apparently not. And then there was even some funny images that came out from today's training, I believe, that Gareth was just kind of like practicing his golf stroke, and even the team actually had a team holiday dinner, the Real Madrid squad, and they went out to a restaurant and did kind of a gift exchange. And as a gag gift, Marcelo got Bale a nice brand new golf club. So I think the squad just gets a laugh out of it. Bale's agent Jonathan Barnett came out earlier this week talking about how the players, they just laugh about it. I mean, at this point, it's just a big joke to them.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it? Because we actually saw Gareth Bale as well laughing himself. And that was a meme that went around social media, of course, again, when he came off. Well, he didn't come on the pitch. He started to warm up on the side of the pitch, and it was flagged that the boos rung around the stadium, and he just smiled. He laughed.
Yeah, he actually came out in an interview this week and said he's gotten to the point where he just kind of shrugs it off. I mean, he said when he was younger, maybe it was a little bit harder for him to deal with it. But now he just shrugs it off and laughs. And I guess that's one way of dealing with it. I don't know if it endears himself to the Real Madrid faithful any further, but it is one way to cope.
And, of course, he made his first start last week against Alaves. Speaking of Gareth Bale, first start since October, since the start of October as well, and actually got the win. And a spirited win, I suppose you'd say. Ramos obviously putting Madrid in the lead. And Danny Carvajal, bumbling one over the line, but good because it was in response to Alaves equalising. So an immediate response from Madrid.
Yeah, it was one of those gritty wins, you know. It was pouring down, lashing. The rain was lashing down. It was just Victoria is in the Basque region of Spain, so it was a cold, freezing night, and it's usually a difficult stadium to go to. And the team just grinded out a win. Sometimes, I mean, that's what you got to do. And these were games. Credit to Zidane. These were games that the team was losing last year, and we did lose to Alaves last year, and Levante, and so many others, and these we're finally starting to see some guys recover their form. Danny Carvajal, who was on the score sheet, he's recovering his form. Cruz, he's been excellent this season. Isco's now getting back in the fold. All these players that were corpses of themselves last year are now finally starting to recover.
Yeah, indeed. And we're going to get on to the clash, of course, this weekend against Espanyol. But just looking ahead, of course, to the El Clasico, not long now before that game comes up, 18th of December. The news this week is that Eden Hazard is definitely going to be out of that game, potentially Marcelo as well. Eden Hazard not being in the side, that's a massive loss, isn't it?
It's massive. It's a huge blow. No Madrid fan was expecting that. The initial reports had said he'd be out for 10 days. He'd be back in time to get some minutes against Valencia and then be ready for the Barcelona game. And now it's coming out that he won't play again until 2020 against Getafe. And so that's a huge loss. He was really coming into form. He was looking like that 100 million euro player that we bought. It took 2 to 3 months for him to finally get fitness, finally find his feet, gel with his teammates. But these last few games, he was just phenomenal. And to lose him is just a huge blow. And then now, like you said, the injury reports just came one after the other. First it was Hazard, now Marcelo, who's probably not going to make it. And then Bale himself is a knock and will be out probably the next two games, but should be good for El Clasico.
I just have to touch on this as well with you, Matt. And I don't know whether you've seen this news about Florentino Perez, who apparently has recently held talks with some officials from a whole host of leading clubs throughout Europe, has actually spoken to the FIFA president, yeah, Gianni Infantino as well. I'm sure you have seen this news, that he has this grand vision, which we always know Florentino Perez seems to do, but this is bonkers, right? He's suggesting that we have one epic, groundbreaking elite competition for the world's richest clubs. It will be completely unattached from their domestic competition. None of that branding, none of La Liga, Premier League, Eredivisie, Ligue 1, Bundesliga, whatever you want to call it. It will be two divisions as well of 20 teams playing a full season of football. Surely this is slightly bonkers.
So yeah, I did see that news, and let me preface this by saying that I have tremendous respect for Florentino Perez. I think what he's done at Real Madrid is just incredible. I think he's one of the most influential figures in our club history. And a lot of people criticize him and I think are far too harsh on Perez. But in this regard, in this specific topic, and on this proposal, I am just completely against it. I don't understand. I mean, I understand it. It's for the revenue. But at the same point, it just ruins kind of the romance of football. It's what we love the Champions League. We love the Champions League for what it is today. We love the domestic leagues. I mean, part of it's part of the culture in Spain. I mean, that's, you don't want to lose that. It's why it's a huge part of the tourism. It's what attracts people to go to Spain. It's what makes people fall in love with Spain. And there's so much tradition and history, and just, you don't want to lose that. And that this would just be, I'm not a proponent of this proposal that he's throwing out. And I really hope this doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah. And you know what? We've kind of seen this sort of conversation before. And listen, I get that they want to go bigger and better. But can we not just get to a stage in life where we go, do you know what? This is what it is. This is the way that football is. It's the way that football works since the first pig's bladder was kicked around some unknown town in the UK, for crying out loud. That is just the way that football is. You can't change it. We have the Premier League here. You have La Liga in Spain. It's brilliant. We have the Champions League, which we tampered with to make it into the Champions League. I much preferred it when it was the European Cup and a knockout competition, but I get lambasted for that because people say, no, because then you get rubbish teams getting to the final, like we saw with Red Star Belgrade back in the early 90s. That, for me, is the beauty of it. That's the beauty of these competitions. And yes, I understand that the format had to be changed for the Champions League and it's become incredibly lucrative as a result, but it also means that you're getting teams who finish fourth getting to the Champions League final, like Spurs and Liverpool last season. I don't agree with that. But on this scenario here that he's proposing, I know that we've heard Bayern Munich have apparently been in discussions for years now about trying to break away from the Bundesliga because they're not happy with the way things are there and they want to go bigger and better. But like you said, it's tourism. It's an attraction on a global scale. People come to England to watch the Premier League. People go to the Bernabeu. They go to the Nou Camp because that's what they want to see. If they start having to delve into a global brand and a full season with 20 teams from all over Europe, what are we then going to do? Are we not going to have the Champions League? I mean, it's so many permutations for this.
Exactly. And I mean, from Real Madrid's perspective and Bayern Munich's perspective, I get it. I think they see what's the amount of money that the Premier League brings in. They see these English clubs, like clubs in the relegation, like that just moved up from the Championship, making bucket loads of money, and our teams in La Liga can't compete. And Real Madrid is worried, and Barcelona and Bayern Munich and all these other teams, I'm sure they're worried that they're not going to be able to compete with the Premier League as the years continue to roll by. And this is kind of their way of getting back at not only the Premier League, but at UEFA, who they feel have been withholding money from them. And it's been very lucrative for UEFA, but not so much for the big European clubs that have won, for instance, Real Madrid, who have won the Champions League three times in a row. And so I understand it. I understand the perspective, but at the same time, I think we all agree. I think all fans agree that we don't want to see this happen. We just do not want to see it happen.
No, the campaign starts here, Matt. Well, to be fair, the campaign's already started. We're just going to add to it. We're going to add to the campaign. Let's look at the game tomorrow, the early kickoff midday here in the UK. Real Madrid hosting Espanyol. You have to go all the way back to April 1996 for the last time Madrid lost to Espanyol at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to change tomorrow. I mean, Espanyol have just been awful this season. And even Pablo Machin, their coach, came out in the last press conference after their last game and just basically said, what do you expect me to do? I'm playing with youngsters. I'm playing with these players. Like, he just totally criticized his squad, didn't take any responsibility. And he's clearly trying to get a rise out of them. But I mean, my God, that's certain one way to go. And I just don't see it happening. Real Madrid's finally hitting their stride, hitting their form. Like I said, players are recovering. Zidane's found his footing now with this squad. And I think it's just going to be another 3 points on the board.
Yeah, and poised quite splendidly at the top of La Liga, isn't it? Level on points with Barca at the top. They play Mallorca this weekend. Of course, Mallorca taking points off Madrid earlier in the season. So it's all getting rather tasty in the build-up to that El Clasico clash on December the 18th.
It is. And then the following weekend, I mean, Barcelona have Real Sociedad and we have Valencia. So those are two big games in their own right, but if we can both come in tied on points at the top of the league, oh, that will make El Clasico even more tastier than it is.
Won't it just? Kind of as tasty as a nice fresh mint, Matt. And on that note, we will let you go. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Take care.
That was Matt Wiltsey of Managing Madrid. And this has been the El Clasico Fan Show Real Madrid section. Next up, Barcelona.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
When 85 minutes are on the clock, who are you going to call? When you need to win a Ballon d'Or, who are you going to call? Of course, there is only one man for the job, and that job is Lionel Messi. What a goal in the Wanda Metropolitano last week, if I can say it right, and his sixth Ballon d'Or this week, collected by a man you simply run out of superlatives to describe. This is the Barcelona fan show here on Love Sport, part of our El Clasico half an hour. Lionel Messi 1, Atletico Madrid 0. Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast is on the line right now. Dan, that goal, I'm sorry, even Diego Simeone had to applaud it.
Yeah, but it's an odd thing that, hello, by the way,
hi,
it's an odd thing that it seemed like he picked it up at 30, 40 yards from goal and everyone knew, and this is what it was spoken after the match, but I believe it was Saul that made a comment, that everybody knew what was going to happen the minute he picked that ball up and the 1-2 with Luis Suarez. But it's a goal that, for so many players, is a really difficult finish, and yet it's something that's become a marquee goal for him. It's something that he's a goal that he scored many, many times before. And you're right, of all you said in the praise leading up to him winning the fifth Ballon d'Or, I did a lot of research on it beforehand. Just thinking back, we almost forget that in the last year, some of those incredible moments that he's had. Go back all the way a year ago to December. He had those two amazing free kicks against Espanyol. And since then, there's just been some marquee performances. And it's understandable why, as much as people get frustrated about the bias and obviously the Ballon d'Or, it seemingly in today's social media world has lost a lot of its luster because, maybe 30 years from now, we talk about who won Ballon d'Ors and we view legacy through that scope. But in today's, in modern, the way that the media works currently, it's a bunch of different fan bases screaming bias and screaming unfair narratives. But this year, I think Messi was just too good for the narrative to be overtaken by a player like Virgil van Dijk for all the winning he did. And I don't know how Cristiano Ronaldo was top three, but anyway, he had the same thing with the narrative of Ronaldo constantly needing to be in the top three. And yet I think Messi was just too good. He was the best player in the world, and that's why he won the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, mate. And with regards to the finish against Atletico, he does it in his sleep. I mean, he's just done it over and over again in life. And like you said, we absolutely knew. You just knew. You had that sense. Everybody in the ground thought, oh no, here we go. And listen, a great touch. That's telepathy between him and Luis Suarez. Suarez knew exactly what he was going to do. And let's not underestimate the keeper that he's beaten here as well. Jan Oblak, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, regularly comes up in the top three conversation when you're discussing who is the best goalkeeper in the world. And he's just bent it round him like he wasn't there. It was just absolutely brilliant. And such a crucial time of the game as well. It's just brilliant. He just keeps getting better and better. And I know that seems crazy, but he does. And a sixth Ballon d'Or, like you said. And yes, the narrative has... I'm sick of it, to be honest here. I'm absolutely sick of it. It's social media that probably prompts that narrative now. And the Virgil van Dijk loving. We get it a lot more than you probably do over there, mate. I don't know, but it yep. drives me mad. A brilliant player. An incredibly gifted player. Absolutely.
Sure.
But let's all just calm down. And actually, if we live and die by stats, which is what we seem to do in football now, Virgil van Dijk's stats are far worse than they were last season.
Yeah, I mean, and not to dig too much into van Dijk. I mean, I come on here speaking from the Barcelona perspective. I can't say that I saw Virgil van Dijk. I mean, I watched a bit other than seeing him in the UEFA Nations League with the Netherlands. And of course, I saw Liverpool aplenty, including the tie between the two. But we almost forget, even in that Liverpool tie, looking at the comparison between the two players, that first leg was basically won by Messi. I mean, Messi just dominated that match, and that's why the what happened at Anfield then hurt so much, and why those scars are cut so deep for Cules was because Messi had decided that tie already, and then it was reversed for the second year in a row. But I mean, I also think back to last March, that 4-1 win against Real Betis, that Puskas nominee goal by Messi, and he had so many of those moments. And obviously, it's unfair to try to compare a defender with an attacker. But again, I think Messi was just too good that even with what happened in 90 minutes at Anfield. And then I guess you could count the Copa del Rey against him, but his team still won the Liga. He was still the best player in Spain. He was still the best player in Europe, and that's why he won the Ballon d'Or. So again, it's no disservice to Virgil van Dijk, but there's a reason why it's almost like comparing it to the NBA, where when Steph Curry and Kevin Durant were winning all those trophies together for the Warriors, it almost diluted their MVP credentials, and you almost share the success. And for Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah, they're also fantastic pieces of that puzzle at Liverpool. And I guess for the negative spin on it is that Barcelona are so reliant on Messi, it almost amplifies just how important he is to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still fuming with Ousmane Dembele, mate. I'm sorry. Just the fact that he could have put that tie beyond doubt. Every time we talk about that Champions League semi-final, it's still... Yeah, I still can't believe that he didn't put that chance away. However, it's gone. It's over.
I'm going to start going through a tunnel and keep talking about it.
Let's forget about it. What I would like to talk about is Ansu Fati, of course. He's been a name on a lot of people's lips this season. Reached an agreement. It looks like his contract is going to go through to June 2022. That also means his buyout clause is going to skyrocket.
Well, yeah, it's at 170 now. That's signing on for, until that point. But once he signs that, is promoted to the first team, it'll balloon to 500. And I do want to say for Ansu Fati, who is not in the roster against Mallorca, he's got some knee issues. It certainly, as a 17-year-old now, just had a birthday a few weeks ago, it's going to be a little bit of start and stop through his career, and I would just always implore people to be very patient. But it shows the investment that, and it's been a problem too, that you have had over the last few seasons, other La Masia talents who were 15, 16 years old at the time. It was, I think, of Pablo Moreno at Juventus and Robert Navarro, who's now with Real Sociedad's B team, and a number of other talents who decided to go elsewhere because they didn't feel like Barcelona, and Xavi Simons to PSG, they felt like Barcelona weren't investing in them properly. But it seems like the board is showing that whether it's Iaso Moriba, and then I expect Pedri, who's currently progressing at Las Palmas and also was a star at the U-17 World Cup with Spain. If the board and if the club does support and believes in these teenagers, they're now showing you that they are willing to fork over the money to show that belief. And at the moment, with Fati's 170 million release clause, just to put that in comparison, Tadebo's at 150, Rakitic 125, obviously a little older too, so it's going to be lower. Semedo's at 100, Vague's at 100, Alenia's at 75, which might be a little bit low. And that also puts Fati's release clause just behind Marc-Andre ter Stegen at 180 at the moment. But when it rises to 400 million, that'll be equal to Arthur, Frankie de Jong, and Ousmane Dembele. So the one challenge then that the Barcelona locker room and all those captains and leaders then have to deal with is just Barca, in the times of Carlos Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, egos were never a worry. But I think, and it's no disservice to the leadership of Busquets and Messi and Piqué and Roberto as captains, but I think there's just a little bit of a worry about the way that the transfer market and the way that money has just gone crazy in European football, that there is a little worry about egos. And again, we have to put the trust into the captains that that's not going to be an issue. It's going to smooth everything over and nobody's going to worry about this very promising 17-year-old who seems to be getting paid for high expectations. But I also want to remind you that 4 or 5 years down the road, when Piqué and most likely Jordi Alba and Messi and Luis Suarez are no longer at the club, the expectation is that Fati at that moment will be a top 1, 2, 3 player, not just at Barcelona, but maybe in all of Europe.
Absolutely, Dan. And we've only got a couple minutes left, so I'll quickly ask you about the game. Mallorca this weekend, of course, haven't lost to them at the Nou Camp since May 2008. It's poised very nicely at the top of La Liga as we gradually build up. The crescendo is building, of course, to El Clasico on the 18th of December. Mallorca pretty much should go without a hitch, I'd imagine. And Eden Hazard not going to be playing in El Clasico as well. Is that something that Barcelona fans particularly think about? Are you fussed about that, or are you fully focused on Barcelona?
Yeah, I mean, the way Barcelona has been playing, people say they might be better against Dortmund, Atletico Madrid. They took care of business, got the results, sure. But this is still a team that, I mean, the week before that, before these two wins, it seemed as if the sky was falling and there was all these issues. So I take no La Liga match for granted. And I think Mallorca, of all those teams languishing down in the bottom, whether it's Leganés or Espanyol, I think Mallorca certainly are going to be in a fight to wind up avoiding relegation. And that's what seems like all the experts are. But I think they're a good team and they play well and they play with ambition and they work hard. And I think the other narrative here, Takefusa Kubo, I mean, he might start, he might come off the bench. That'll be what's dominating the news cycle, obviously, choosing Real Madrid over Barcelona. But all that said, I think Mallorca is going to be a tough test with Febas and Rodriguez, Baba, who I really, really like. They do have some pieces. But yes, you're right that Barcelona should take care of business. But again, I don't look past that at all. In the same way that Inter Milan, the Champions League group, is already decided. Barca has already won the group, and Inter Milan will be fighting as Dortmund plays Slavia Prague on the other side of things for their group, their knockout stage lives. But all that said, I think Barca, instead of calling up youngsters or doing anything like that, I fully anticipate they're going to play. I mean, Rakitic will probably get a start. Vidal will get a start. Maybe players who Valverde is going to want to give them a little more run out. I mean, I think Wage will get a start in that match as well, because again, it doesn't matter, but it's not going to be one of those times where when Barca in previous season, when they've wrapped it all up, the squad is just so deep and players need minutes. And I think Valverde is going to, he'll reward some of his veterans who haven't been getting a regular rotation. Yeah.
Lovely stuff, mate. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. That was Dan Hilton of the Barcelona podcast on this, the El Clasico Fan Show. We'll see you next week.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available. But if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.